Welcome to What You Don't Know, Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. Our topic for tonight is harm reduction strategies. We will begin tonight's show with a pre-recorded interview that Jack did with Kali Sham DeVito, a drug counselor in Mendocino County.
Hi, my name's Jack, and we're here today talking with Kali Sham DeVito, and I'm going to be interviewing him on harm reduction, how it works, and how it would work if implied in our school district.
This is Kali Sham DeVito. I'm a psychotherapist working locally, and I'm going to be talking about harm reduction and my experiences and understanding of harm reduction with Jack.
Kali Sham, a lot of us out there don't really know a lot about what harm reduction is, so could you just start off explaining a little bit about it and what you know?
I think the simplest way I can explain in my own words is that harm reduction refers to measures aimed at reducing the harm associated with drug use without necessarily requiring a reduction in consumption of the drugs. There's a few key aspects. One is that from a harm reduction perspective, I accept the user's decision to use. The second piece is that I treat this person with dignity as a human being. And by the same token, that person respects the laws. And thirdly, I guess, that it's neutral regarding long-term goals of intervention, as I'm a counselor. So I don't have an agenda when I meet with somebody about what their long-term goals are in terms of their drug use.
Okay, well, I've heard a lot of people say that harm reduction in many ways promotes drug use. What are your feelings about that?
I think there's, you know, people are going to do what they want to do. I think what is important is that we provide accurate information and allow people to make decisions on their own. Certainly, there's some times when things are out of control and there may be stronger interventions that are necessary.
Do you have any ideas on how harm reduction originated?
My understanding for this country is that it came into wider use practice in the 1980s in the context of the HIV disease epidemic and also the failure of drug treatment and 12-step programs.
How would it work? I mean, I've noticed that the main drugs in our area that teens use are acid, ecstasy, LSD, alcohol, and tobacco. How does harm reduction treat these drugs?
I think foremost to working from harm reduction philosophy, perspective, intervention, is having a dialogue, starting a conversation, and that arises out of relationships. So that's where I work. I want to have a relationship with the people I want to help or are seeking help from me.
What got you interested in harm reduction?
My experience in the Bay Area working with folks that were chemically dependent, drug addicted to speed and homeless and have health concerns such as HIV and HCV, hepatitis C virus, taught me that when so many complex things are going on in a person's life, there's often prioritizing that needs to happen. And often the programs that I was working for would require abstinence in order to address issues of maybe housing or health. And I learned that it was an obstacle. It was a high threshold to receiving services.
What are some problems you've ran into using it?
I don't know if this is my problem or the other person's problem. I think resistance. You know, when I come at somebody with my agenda, I think that's where a problem arises. So having an agenda is a problem, I think, rather than meeting the person where they're at and trying to understand, you know, what is it that you want and how can I help you and what is your concern today?
How does harm reduction differ or relate to 12-step programs?
I would say that 12-step is a choice on a menu in harm reduction philosophy. Often when people start looking at their drug use, end up choosing abstinence as a goal, and 12-step processes can serve to support that goal. I think how it can hinder the exploration is that it's you either choose absence now or you can't participate. I think that's where it gets to be difficult.
What do you think are some problems with choosing abstinence now?
It depends on, I don't necessarily see it as a problem. It has to be something that the person really wants for themselves. And unless, I believe, unless they're ready to go to a place of abstinence, it's going to be an outside agenda. So I don't know if you're asking me something else.
Do you think that 12-step programs are one-sided?
I would say that they can be limited. But, you know, different communities and different meetings, how they're run, that has to be taken into consideration. So I would say that there's definitely a continuum of openness to meeting people where they're at within 12-step process groups. I wouldn't say that, you know, they're all closed.
Does law enforcement or the juvenile justice system know anything about harm reduction? And if so, how do they treat it?
Well, clearly we're moving toward a more compassionate understanding of drug use from a political standpoint, from a legal standpoint, with Prop 36. I think there's a long way to go, and I think that clearly drug users are criminalized. And I don't believe that drug use has many reasons. It could be a symptom of pain management. It could be a mental health issue that's going on. It could be recreational. So I think from my perspective and the role that I work in is I want to know what's happening and what's going on. And I think that the law enforcement agencies don't take the time or even have the time to really tease out or be curious about maybe the underlying issues that are going on.
Yeah. Do you think they treat it more as a moral or legal issue?
It seems so. And I know there's a lot of good folks, lots of good folks that, you know, work in law enforcement. So I don't want to demonize the law enforcement. I don't know if they have the support or training to empathize with what's happening for folks when they use drugs or when they come into their jurisdiction for whatever reason, whether they're breaking the law or they're busted because they're in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Do you think law enforcement should be required to take this training?
I think that it would be helpful to expand the paradigm of what is currently taking place.
Do you think harm reduction programs would work if applied to a high school environment?
I think that how harm reduction can come into a high school situation is first slowly and two, through education, providing accurate information about drugs, various drugs and their effects, both on the body and the mind and the spirit. So youth are informed consumers, so they have access to informed choices.
What do you think is wrong with the drug education system today? Besides not existing,
I don't know if I can fully answer that. I'm going to go back to my feelings about relationships. What's necessary is to engage all people, regardless of age, in conversation about what their concerns are and what's the quality of life they hope to have, and that may include drug use. It may not include drug use, but I think part of drug education entails real relationship and engaging people in a non-judgmental conversation, in addition to, you know, bestowing people with accurate information about drug use and its effects, and also combination of drugs.
What are your views and opinions on the DARE programs and the Just Say No campaigns?
I can't really speak to the DARE campaign. I can say Just Say No. I mean, I think it takes... We have to consider where a person's been. And when someone shows up, you know, in my office or wherever I work with them or have worked with them, everyone has a story, and I want to know what their story is. And I want to know why they've used and how it works for them and maybe what they're trying to address. And also to understand, if they do, what are their concerns? What are their concerns about their drug use in terms of could be sex, could be housing, could be relationships, could be physical health, could be mental health. How is their drug use adversely or positively affecting a wide variety of areas in their life. And when I just come at somebody with saying, you know, you just got to say no, well, that may be a strategy, but I don't think it's the only strategy.
In harm reduction, I hear a lot about risk and harms. Could you explain the difference between a risk and a harm?
One puts themselves at risk for overdose when they use many different drugs in a short amount of time. So if somebody is using speed and LSD and alcohol and marijuana all within, you know, a 24-hour period at the same time, there's certainly a risk for overdose. Whether or not somebody does overdose, I can't predict necessarily, but there is certainly a risk of overdosing with using all of those drugs at one time. So the harm would be the actual overdose.
Do you see any relationships with the apparent increase in violence with drug use?
That's a big question.
Or race and drug
use. I think the degree of violence in our culture has to do with the culture's belief about using anger as a way of communicating. About it has a lot, everything to do with race and class and homophobia, ideas about masculinity, gender, socialization. And I believe that drug use intensifies those issues, but I would not say that drug use is a reason for violence. I would say it's about our beliefs about violence and our beliefs about how to interact.
Do you think there's a such thing as safe drug use?
Oh, yeah, sure. Of course there is. You know, people who have a drink or two or whatever their drug of choice is and don't drive. You know, they have a designated driver. That's harm reduction. You know, waiting until the alcohol use is, you know, alcohol is out of your system so you're alert and you're not under the influence and then get in the car. That's harm reduction.
It's also a risk.
Getting in the car, right. That's why we wear safety belts, which is also a harm reduction practice.
What overall steps would someone take besides forming a relationship to reduce the overall consumption of drugs?
I think that the relationship is everything. So that's a big piece of it for me. Long-term abstinence, necessarily a goal of harm reduction. It may be the goal of the person that's coming in for help or that, you know, I'm educating. But it's not necessarily a goal of harm reduction. There's a term that I hold in my head, which is called recovery readiness, meaning that it's a process. And it may take a long time for someone to get to a place where they have decided, based on their experiences and based on what they've explored and based on what they've experienced with their drug use, that they don't want to use in the way that they've been using. And that may look like abstinence. It may look like social use and recreational use.
So the person ultimately has to make the choice for themselves?
Right. Right. And so how I work is helping people to find those choices.
Meet them where they're at.
Meet them where they're at.
Is there any resources out there that you could throw out there to see if anyone else wants to know anything more about harm reduction?
Sure. I think a big resource is the Harm Reduction Coalition, and they're based in Oakland. And they provide education for agencies and individuals. They're a clearinghouse for information on harm reduction policies and philosophy.
Is there a conflict between the zero tolerance policies in schools and harm reduction? And if so, how does the school administration treat it?
I think whatever the context, whether it's one's own home or whether it's a school or whether it's a community center, that agency has to be really clear about its boundaries. What they are willing to work with or tolerate, that has to be clear. And we all have the right to make those boundaries. I think how a zero tolerance may have a deleterious effect is that people fall through the cracks. If there was a safety net for someone to maybe chill out while they were coming down at a particular place, whether it was an agency or a school, that might allow them to be off the streets, so it would reduce the risk of being arrested. I think that zero tolerance can be an obstacle for people asking and getting the help they need, regardless of the context. It could be a community mental health organization, it could be a school, it could be someone's own home. It's a clear shutdown of a conversation that could possibly happen. And at the same time, a school or a community mental health center or whatever needs to be very clear about what they're comfortable with and what they're willing to work with. But, you know, at the same time, people fall through the cracks. There's people that are committed to their drug use for a long time, and there's going to be drug use in the future. So how, as a society, how do we meet those people? You know, how do we engage with them? Not as other, but as a part of ourselves, as part of the community.
Do you find it harder to work with teenagers than adults?
In terms of
getting them to open up and be able to form a relationship? Because, I mean, I think kids would be less likely or be more restrainive and hold back than adults.
Well, my experience has shown me that most often that I'm working, not all the time, but most often, the reason why someone is in my office, a youth is in my office, is because they've been referred to me and not because they are coming in and seeking my support. So right there, that's, you know, for the context that I'm in, that's a setup.
What do you think would make people not want to come in and seek help on their own?
Well, I imagine the assumption is that they feel they're going to be shamed, judged, punished in some way.
How could we make it clear to people that they're not going to be judged or shamed? Because everybody has it built in their heads that drugs are bad.
Right.
I mean, so if someone has a problem, how are they supposed to get help?
For me, that's an ongoing open question. I think as a society, we need to look at our beliefs about drugs first. You know, I mean, I'm sure the same people that are saying drugs are bad use some form of drugs in their life. Yeah, so I think there has to be an ongoing discussion about, you know, what drugs really are and at what point do they become harmful.
How are things handled up here using harm reduction compared to what you've come across with down in the area where you came from? You came from the Bay Area, right?
Well, I think even in the Bay Area, there's just the beginning of harm reduction philosophy and interventions. What I know is that there's public funding that in the contracts that say that particular amount of funds are earmarked toward harm reduction interventions and services. So it could be needle exchange, could be condom distribution, could be
anything,
counseling processes that don't discharge a person if they relapse. So I can't really say what's happening here on that level of funding, but I think that's a big piece of where the ball is going to start anywhere, regardless of where it is, whether it's, you know, anywhere in the country, that there has to be money to provide these services as well as education. So I think that there's people, I would say that there's people, and I don't want to make, you know, like, oh, the Bay Area is better and they're more, you know, savvy. They're just, you know, there's a lot of resources in the Bay Area that may not, fiscal resources that may not be up here.
How will we go about getting resources up here?
Right. Well, I think that's a political process. But I think that it could start from the bottom up. You know,
where's the bottom?
Well, you know, you're a youth, and it seems apparent to me that you're involved and concerned about community issues. So you're educating yourself and learning about new ideas and, you know, sharing them with others and having a conversation about them and trying to figure out where your beliefs are and where your values are and so on down the line. So I think it's a community dialogue that takes place.
When do you think drug education should start?
I could say where it should start, and that's, you know, based in the family, whatever, in the broadest sense of the term family. I think that's drug use is their beliefs about what drugs mean, and especially when I was young, you know, my beliefs came solely from my family. So I think there has to be a clear understanding of what that is and respect for those. And it's going to be different across families, you know, earlier than later. It's going to look differently at different ages because, you know, as people, we're able to understand different sorts of information and complexity of information at different levels in different ways. You know, so, you know, a 5-year-old isn't going to understand the same thing that a 10 or a 16-year-old is able to absorb. So it has to be age-appropriate education, but I would say earlier than later.
Mm-hmm. I'm in the process of designing a 6-week drug outreach program where I go and teach a class of 8th graders 5-6 presentations on drug education, and people don't want it to happen. And could you tell me a little bit on why parents, administration wouldn't want kids to be educated on drugs?
You know, I can only guess it's fear that having a discussion about it is going to be seen imply approval. So why not? So maybe you need to, maybe there needs to be an 8-week course for parents and teachers. Mm-hmm. And when I say course, the ideal that I would want to maybe strive for is, again, engaging a conversation. And there's something that the fear and the anger needs to be expressed, but there's something underlying that. And usually when people are afraid or angry, they're uncertain about something. And it may be a mix of realistic and unrealistic. What I think might help is not only giving, like, just giving, disseminating information, but also trying to entertain a critical conversation about the information. Does drug use happen here? Does chaotic drug use happen? Is it just experimentation? Is it addiction? Is it abuse? Those are all different degrees of drug use. But what is so, rather than what is made up, and, you know, it doesn't happen here, or everybody is drug addicted. I mean, those are two extremes. What's really happening? You know, to compare someone who has a home and does drugs in their home versus someone who doesn't have a home, is on the street, that person who's on the street doing drugs is much more at risk for being arrested than the person who does maybe the same amount of drugs but in their own home. There might be a belief that the country is a place that is bucolic and that doesn't have drugs or violence or gangs. It seems so huge. It seems so, I mean, to be incarcerated, it seems like a huge, you know, and the degree people are thrown in jail or break law in the country is just, I don't know how to answer that.
But teens that are referred to you by courts, say if someone doesn't want help, but you think they need help, how would you go about making it clear to them that they do need help?
In the course of a conversation, if someone clearly has serious drug-related harms going on in their life, I would point those out to them and, you know, and say, you know, and compassionately and gently say, you know, this is what I hear. This is what I see based on what you're telling me and what you're sharing about your drug use and your life. This is what I see, what's going on. And I would mirror back the consequences that I hear that are happening, in negative consequences that are, and also positive consequences. Sometimes people's, even if in the midst of chaotic drug use, there's some positive consequences going on. But I think the ultimate step is, and it may take a long time, but, or it's going to vary with people. The first step is that the other person, is going to have to say, yeah, that's a concern for me. I'm concerned about, you know, those consequences.
Thank you very much, Kalishama. You provided us some great information.
Okay, thanks.